Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and I'm here with attorney Jacqueline Friedman-Stein from the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants and the Health Law and Litigation Law Firm of Michael V. Fabia and Associates in Chicago. This is the monthly Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants podcast featuring information, news, and updates in professional licensing and regulatory matters. The Illinois Professional Licensing Consultant is a group of highly experienced attorneys and investigators who previously worked for the IDPR, which is the Illinois Department of Professional Regulation, and they will represent and or defend licensed professionals in cases involving the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, Illinois Department of Public Aid, and Illinois Department of Public Health. In this monthly podcast series, our attorneys and consultants will share news, tips, and resources. Don't forget to use the on-demand links to all of our episodes and our Blog Talk Radio host channel. For more information about Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants, please visit www.il-licensing.com. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illinois Professional Licensing Consultant Attorneys. And we are on Twitter at licensing_attorneys. Today's show is Professional Licensing and Regulation with Jacqueline Friedman-Stein. And the topics we'll cover in today's program are her introduction, of course, and then some examples of professions you may encounter in professional licensing, the IDFPR and how they work to regulate professional licensing and practice, applicants for professional licensing and potential issues in the application process. We'll also talk about licensing issues when the professional practices occur in multiple states. We'll also talk about the inquiry procedures and disciplinary processes involved with some potential outcomes, and then restoring a professional license in various scenarios. Our guest, Jacqueline Friedman-Stein, is a professional licensing attorney of counsel to the Chicago Health Law and Litigation Firm of Michael V. Fabia and Associates, and formerly the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, as well as private law firms specializing in healthcare law and legal services and professional licensing. Jackie, as we'll talk to her, earned her Bachelor of Arts from the University of Colorado Boulder, her Juris Doctorate from Chicago Kent College of Law, which is part of the Illinois Institute of Technology, and her LLM in Health Law from Loyola University Chicago of Law. As a general disclaimer, this is a general information program, and any advice shared on the show does not constitute legal advice. Communication with our attorneys and callers cannot give rise to an attorney-client relationship, and if you have any questions, you should call the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants and make an appointment to speak to an attorney by dialing 773-631-4850. Finally, all callers remain confidential, and all rights to this broadcast are reserved. Ms. Stein, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
All right, well, a good day to you, and I look forward to this is the first podcast in this monthly series where we're going to share all the good news, tips, information on Illinois professional licensing and other matters for our attorneys who make referrals to people like yourself and for other people listening out there who may be a professional with a licensing problem. So if we could just go ahead, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and let us know a little bit about your background and how you came to practice in this area.
Well, again, my name is Jackie Stein, and I am of counsel with Michael Fabia and Associates. And I got into this field years ago. I was a medical prosecutor for the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation. And in that role, I acted as a prosecutor dealing with mostly the medical profession. And also, I worked with a medical licensing board with regards to issues of applicants and individuals who are applying for a license that may have had issues that would affect their license in the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us a couple of, we'll talk about this more, but just general examples of what that might mean?
Yeah, for example, if an individual had applied for a license and maybe they had a say, a personal history issue, such as they had had a DUI or maybe they had mental health issues. And this, when they applied for their license, they would have answered a question regarding this. This would raise a red flag with the department, and then they would refer this to the Medical Licensing Board for review. And then when I was with the department, the way they did it, I would sit in on the licensing board meetings, and the individual would be interviewed, and then a recommendation would be made. For example, maybe they would, if they had a substance abuse issue, maybe they would have a license issued, but would also have an agreement of care, counseling, and treatment, which would, you know, just make sure that they are being monitored and that they are able to practice safely, and that their substance abuse issue wouldn't get in the way of their practice.
It seems like it's a lot of crossing the T's and dotting the I's, making sure that everyone is a good person to be out there in the community. Because in the background, the whole gist of the IDFPR, which I'll talk about, is overseeing the regulation and licensing and protecting, making sure that our professionals are good professionals, and that the public who use their services are in good hands. So as we move forward, what are some of the other professions you might encounter in professional licensing? You mentioned medical. What are some of the additional professions that might fall under this professional licensing category?
Well, the department licenses about 200 licensing categories, and about 49 legislative acts that are intended to regulate them. We represent healthcare professionals, doctors, nurses, social workers, chiropractors, but also we represent all of the other professions, from real estate brokers, real estate appraisers, funeral home directors, veterinarians. Again, it really, it runs the gamut. And we have represented all sorts of licensed professions.
So really that list is, how would you know if your profession is, or you're going into a profession, whether that is something that would need to be licensed, I suppose? Where would you start?
Well, you could, obviously it's the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation has a website that is very extensive, and it lists all of the licensing categories and also has the legislative acts. And you can find your profession or find out if the profession that you're going into is licensed, and you can review the act, review the rules to make sure that, that you have fulfilled all the requirements for that profession. And then, go ahead and fill out the application, submit it to the department, and they'll review it and make sure that you are in compliance with the act.
Okay. Now, there are some professions that are not. Although you mentioned that there are about 200 different licensing categories with the IDFPR, there are also some professions. Lawyers, for example, are not regulated by them. So let's not go ahead and assume that everything under the sun in the state of Illinois is regulated by them. But could you tell us a little bit more about who the IDFPR is, their general purpose, what they do, and what does it mean when we talk about regulating a professional licensing and practice? What are all the aspects of regulation from beginning into the profession and then beyond?
Well, sure. So as you sort of said, the mission of the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation is, you can see on their website too, is to serve, safeguard, and promote the health, safety, and public welfare. And they do this by ensuring that the licensure qualifications are met, and that if somebody is in violation of one of those sections of the act that applies to their license, that they are you know, enforcing the act, that they're following through with a complaint that may have been made. So the acts are intended to regulate the professions. And then, you know, how the process works is that, you know, somebody may have a complaint, for example, against a, say, physician. They could either write a letter complaining about this individual. They could go on the website and complain. There's a section on the website where you can file a complaint. And then from there, it would go to the investigative unit, and they'll look into this complaint. They may call the, if it's not anonymous, they may call the individual who filed the complaint and you know, do an investigation. If they feel that there's a possible violation there, it may be referred to prosecutions. And then from there, either the prosecutor will decide that this is serious enough to file a complaint against the individual, or they may send a notice of an informal conference, which allows this individual to come into the to come to the department, meet with the prosecuting attorney and a board member, and discuss the issue and try and figure out a way to resolve it. And before this, the investigator may have even spoken to the professional that is being investigated and may have interviewed them.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it sounds appropriate to highlight that the investigation is just an investigation. Did not all investigations lead to prosecutions?
Right. It's possible that a complaint could be filed and the investigator could look into it and maybe discuss, if it's a medical situation, discuss it with the department's medical coordinator and decide that there is no violation of the act and close the case. So a professional may get a call from an investigator, and of course they should be concerned about it, but it may be that that complaint is unfounded and the case will, and it will be closed before it's ever referred to prosecutions.
Mm-hmm.
So that is that's possible.
Let's take the example of I suppose everyone in their professions has different experience levels in dealing with state agencies and licensing and regulation as such. So let's take a real estate professional, for example,
mm-hmm.
someone who is just new into the career, and someone doesn't like something, some client is angered somewhere, and the person gets a call or maybe a letter from an investigator.
Mm-hmm.
What is your advice to them? Because, you know, before you go jump off the tallest building you can find, you probably should relax. And I just wonder how many of these folks do hire an attorney right out of the box, or call
right.
someone, or are they afraid that if they call and hire an attorney to represent them, that makes them look guilty? I mean, these folks might not even have any experience in the legal
right.
profession, or have ever hired a lawyer before.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. And, you know, I think that, you know, if you get a call from an investigator, of course you need to take it very seriously. And there's nothing wrong with returning the phone call to the investigator yourself and sort of hearing what the questions they're asking you. But if you think that maybe it's more than just a simple question about continuing education or, you know, something very minor, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying to the investigator, you know, I really think that that I should talk to an attorney, and can we set up a meeting with my attorney, or can I have them on the phone? I just want to make sure I'm understanding your questions. And I don't think that has any, you know, negative connotation by the investigator. I think that they also would say that it's probably a good idea to have an attorney. You know, these professionals have worked hard to get their license, and you know, it's important to really understand the question and understand what the investigator is looking into. And
mm-hmm.
and sometimes when an investigator calls, they're They may be talking fast. They may be asking questions that aren't always, you know, related specifically to the complaint at first. And so, you know, it's good to have other ears there listening with you.
Certainly. Are all those calls recorded with the IDFPR, as we almost assume they are with a call your insurance company or just about anyone today and the call's recorded?
You know, that's a good question, too. It's my understanding that the investigator is taking notes at this point, that they're not recorded.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that may change, though.
All right. Well, moving forward, so when we have, let's say our individual wants to get their license and they've maybe in the process of obtaining that license, they run into some sort of a road bump, at which point they may call you. Can you give us a few more examples of the type of things professionals applying for professional licenses, what types of challenges these applicants may face, and some just common examples of when someone would want to give someone like you a call?
Okay, so when an individual has made out their application for their license and submitted it to the Illinois Department of Professional Regulation, and then what happens is it goes through the process and will end up with an individual who's reviewing the application. And again, if we use an example of somebody in the medical profession, so the application would be reviewed, and usually there's a couple issues that can come up. You could have a deficiency with education or testing. So with a medical applicant, that could be that you had your medical education in a foreign country, or it could be that you came from another state and that you the testing regulations are a little bit different. So maybe you fell outside of the amount of time you're supposed to pass your USMLE exam. So it could be, anything like that. It could be an issue that you had in your residency program where, maybe you didn't do well, and so the department's thinking maybe you don't have that required 24 months of a residency program. So what they would do then is they would send a deficiency letter asking for more information, information from your residency program, or asking if you've done maybe some kind of remedial training, and so that would give you you're on notice that this is what's missing. The other issues that come up with applicants is when they answer the personal history question, the application will, those questions ask you, have you had maybe a mental health condition that may affect your practice, or were you diagnosed with a condition that would affect your ability to practice? And so these questions would raise a red flag, and the department in this case might again ask for more information. They may send a deficiency letter. If you have a criminal background, or if, say, you've been on probation in another state, or you were maybe during your residency program put on probation for some reason, then you may get what's called a notice of intent to deny. And that means that your application is being has been referred to the prosecution unit, and then you would respond to the intent to deny, and usually the department would have you come in for a conference with a licensing board member and with the department's attorney, and they'll try and resolve the matter by hearing about what it was that, whatever the issue was, the background story. And in some cases, they may issue your license with some kind of discipline. Your license may be issued with, if you have a substance abuse problem, it may be issued with an agreement of care, counseling, and treatment. That's sort of the process. The applications, you're either going to get a deficiency notice. If something is missing, if there's a an issue that could be a violation of the Act or a reason for them not to issue your license, they'll send a notice of an intent to deny.
Mm-hmm. And probably a good thing to note that always to be truthful on these applications, because I suppose the
Absolutely.
Worst thing would be to withhold information and have it come out
yes.
after the fact.
And
yeah.
Yes, and there is a National Practitioner Data Bank. So if you've had an issue with, you know, discipline in another state or, you know, something like that, a criminal background, that will show up on the data bank.
Right. Well, that leads into my next question, too, about multiple jurisdictions. I want to just ask how common it is that professionals hold licenses in multiple states, and what are some of the other implications of having a license in one state as well as another, especially knowing that we have the National Practitioner Data Bank out there?
Right. Well, that is a, you know, a big issue. And if you are, for example, licensed in, just say, the state of Wisconsin, and you were on probation for, even if it was 6 months, and then you get this great job in Illinois, and you come to Illinois, and you apply for your license, obviously, you know, Illinois knows about your Wisconsin probation. If your probation isn't up yet, if it hasn't terminated yet, then Illinois might issue your license, probably will, but would put it on the, would have you on probation, just like Wisconsin had you on probation. And so this would follow you, you know, for whatever state you were applying in. Or if your license had been suspended in one state, then every state that you have a license is going to, if in their act they have sister state discipline, which most of the, I believe all the states do, your license would be similarly disciplined. So that is a real issue. And actually, we have a case now with a nurse who has an issue, and she's licensed in, I think, more than 10 states. So if her license is disciplined in Illinois, she will have all of the other states to contend with as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be quite messy. Something I'll just note there that Michael Fabia, who is the principal of the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants and the principal of the Michael Fabia and Associates law firm in Chicago, is speaking on some of these topics at a national presentation seminar from the DRI group in San Francisco on March 13th through 16th, I believe, specifically on medical malpractice defense practitioners and how they can work with professional licensing consultants and try to spot some of those pitfalls that may come up if, you know, for example, a person, you know, pleads, you know, settles a malpractice case in one state, and you know, then the mandatory reporting from the insurance carrier to the national data bank in its whole. And we'll talk about that in one of our next programs. But so these multi-jurisdictional issues are certainly something to tackle, but not necessarily something that should make one shy away from their choice of practicing their profession. Certainly talking to a professional licensing consultant like Jackie can help someone kind of iron these issues out, and don't think that it's a complete bar to, again, practicing your craft. And my next question is, if we could talk about some of the possible results inquiries could lead to. So within discipline, so many people just think about, well, your license is either lost or not lost. I guess you could get suspended. What happens if it gets revoked? Is that forever, or can you get it back?
Right, and that's another very good point. So, you know, if a complaint has been filed against a professional and, say, it's referred to prosecutions, and the prosecutor decides, okay, you know, we're going to have a conference in this matter. And oftentimes, even if they file a complaint, they will still set up a conference with a board member to try and resolve it without going to a formal hearing. So at that conference, after the board member and the department's attorney have questioned the professional about the situation, they will try to find a way, again, to resolve this. And they could resolve it in a number of ways. If it's not necessarily a clear-cut violation of the Act, and the professional has never had any issues before, then they may recommend an administrative warning letter, which does not show up at discipline against a license. Basically, it's a letter that the professional will get saying, you know, this was the issue, and you need to be really careful. And if we see something like this come back to us again, you know, we'll be looking at disciplining your license. But that's an AWL. And then the least amount of discipline that would be recommended is a reprimand, which is exactly what it says. It's a reprimand. It's sort of a discipline without any conditions, but it is reported to the data bank. It does show up as discipline against your license. It's on the department's website. So even though there are no conditions with it, it still would have an impact on an individual's profession. And then the other possibility would be probation. And usually the department uses probation when they feel like the individual needs to do certain things, needs to have terms and conditions that go along with their discipline. And that could be taking continuing education classes. It could be, going to some kind of, addiction specialist if that's their problem. It could be letters from their employer monitored in that way. So probation is, more serious than a reprimand. And again, it comes with terms and conditions that the individual has to meet. And if they violate that, their license can be suspended. And then suspension would be, again, even, the most harsh, that your license is taken away for either an indefinite period of time or a definite period of time. It could be even like a minimum of 60 days, and then you have to petition to get your license back. And even more serious than that would be a revocation, which, again, your license is taken away, but it's looked at as more serious. And then in certain cases, the department will do what's called, and it's not often used, but a non-disciplinary order with maybe a fine, where, again, it's sort of a gray area whether section of the Act has been violated, but the department wants to send a message, and they might do that with, again, some kind of fine. And then finally, mm-hmm. the other mm-hmm. recommendation that happens if you don't have any, criminal background and you've never been on probation, but maybe you have self-reported. Oftentimes a nurse might self-report if she has a substance abuse problem. And then, the department may recommend an agreement of care, counseling, and treatment. They just want to know that the individual is in treatment, that they are staying clean and sober, and they want someone to be reporting that to them, but they don't want to discipline this individual who usually self-reported, who's never had any, issues as far as patient care. So mm-hmm. that's really, sort of the spectrum of what could be recommended and the types of discipline.
All right. My final question, and we have a few minutes, we can go a little bit over our 30 minutes, but restoring, let's talk a little bit about how one would go about well, they would talk to you. And what would you tell someone about restoring a license to work after a possible discipline by IDFPR? What is that process like?
Well, that process is a little bit, obviously, it's coming at it from the other end. A person, a professional has had their license disciplined in some way. It would be if their license was on probation or, suspended, and they want to petition to restore their license, either if it's been suspended, they want it restored so they can begin practicing again. If it's on probation, they can petition to terminate that probation so that their license will be in good standing again. And the procedure for that is the individual would file a petition for restoration. And, you know, we work with a lot of clients to prepare their petitions for restoration. It needs to include information that shows that they have been in compliance with their probation, that they've maybe continued or that they're up to date with their continuing education. It may include reference letters, you know, things that will make the department comfortable either in restoring their license from after it had been suspended or terminating their probation. And so then in that case, the department wants to be comfortable knowing that this person can practice their profession without being monitored. And so once the petition is filed, again, it goes to the prosecution unit. It's assigned to one of the department's attorneys. And usually the department will set up a conference with a board member and will be able to sort of make a recommendation that way. Or they may say, you know what, this is a petition where we feel we need to have a hearing on the petition and present evidence in order for us to determine whether or not we're going to, either restore somebody's license or terminate the probation. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, so that's usually how it goes. But those cases, you know, can be complicated, you know, especially if an individual's license has been suspended, because you really need to show that the individual can practice their profession safely, and the burden is on the petitioner to show that.
It's a very interesting world of law and administrative law that most people wouldn't think about and might not really give much thought, but very interesting with the professional licensing, different variables and things that can affect a person. And again, you know, my only suggestion is that your permanent record these days follows you so long and so far, and it's so important to talk to a good professional and make sure you get everything ironed out so you're not dragging dead skeletons with you into the future. Exactly. All right, so that pretty much wraps up our first show. I want to remind our listeners to please share these broadcast links in your social networks, as many people find our shows on their friends' Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn pages. So we thank you all for your support in sharing this programming, especially if someone is experiencing a professional licensing issue. They might not be the first to jump out and say that on Facebook, hey, I've got a problem with my license. So that's why it's good to share information like this, because you just never know who might see it, find it, and enjoy it. I want to let everyone know that the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants Program is a podcast that is set up to give you the tips and tools you need to understand professional licensing matters and how to work with the attorneys at Professional Licensing Consultants to help you. We want to thank you for your time and for sharing the show. Again, Jackie, I want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Nick. It's been a pleasure.
All right. And for anyone out there who wants to get in touch with Jackie Stein and learn more, you can call to request a meeting with her at 773-631-4850. You can also send an email to jfstein@lawyer.com. Jackie, it really was a pleasure. I enjoyed the program.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Well, we'll talk to everyone next month. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Bye-bye now.